Welcome our first speaker, which is John L.
My name is John. I'm definitely an addict.
John.
I've been asked to read the speaker portion of the back of IP pamphlet number 2, which is the group pamphlet. In the back, it has the speaker portion, which reads that the NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which is the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is the possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories, because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. My name is John. I'm definitely an addict. I'm grateful to be in the process of recovery. I want to welcome anybody new just coming back, and congratulations to everyone who stayed clean today, because we're all miracles, and for that I'm forever grateful. I don't know how to do this sitting down, so I'll have to stand up. I'm very animate when it comes to speaking in front of a group of Narcotics Anonymous members. Because as I just read, it's important that we deliver a clear message of recovery. And that's what it was that I was asked to do today. And our topic that I was asked to share on is the issue behind the issue. And when I was first told that this was going to be my topic, the first thing I said was, damn. But it was something that I knew was necessary for me to take a look at. Because whenever I share, I raise my hand and open my mouth in a meeting, and I share about anything dealing with the disease of addiction and or recovery, I have to remember that, yes, it is about me, but it's also about someone else. There is someone that is going to be listening attentively to everything I say. I remember when I was a newcomer, and ho, the newcomer is always in any meeting the most important person at that meeting, and they listen the most attentively, because I can remember with identifying with the newcomer, when I first came around, the only thing that I wanted to do was look for an excuse not to have to listen to you. I did not want to be an addict. I did not want to wear that label. I did not want to introduce myself as such. I didn't want to like you. I didn't want you to like me. I wanted to hide in the back of the room. The only reason that I attended Narcotics Anonymous meetings regularly was because my probation officer told me to. I am clean today. Don't get it wrong. I am clean today through God's grace, the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, which are you people, and the New Jersey Department of Corrections. Because like I heard Somebody shared downstairs today in another meeting, I didn't have sense enough to come in here on my own. My first Narcotics Anonymous meeting, I was walking down the street in Trenton on East State Street. I walked in front of 541 East State Street. It no longer exists, but it was the nucleus for addicts in the city of Trenton at one time. And on a Friday night, they would draw the curtains open because you could see through, and you can see a room that held about 200 people in it. And always at the front of that room in the meeting, there was an illustrious refreshment table. And I was hungry. And I was cold. And I had run out of excuses, people, places, and things to blame my situation on. I was hurt. I was confused. I was lonely. I was hungry. I was tired. And the only thing I could think about was how was I going to get one more. But this NA meeting seemed to be a pit stop to my one more. Little did I know that God had something totally different planned for me that night. I want to back it up and let you know that I did not come into this whole Narcotics Anonymous thing thinking, believing, or entertaining the idea in any way, shape, form, or fashion that I was going to recover from anything. I didn't want to recover. I just needed to recuperate. I was broke. And I have to say that that was my issue at that time. My issue at that time was I didn't have any more. I gotta tell you, if I could right now, today, be able to successfully coexist with my drug of choice without the legal ramifications or the negative consequences that come with the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more, I'd be getting high right fucking now. My issue was I didn't have no more. I didn't know how I was going to get any more. I had ran out of options, and I needed a pit stop. I just needed some relief. As with everything that I was ever faced with or dealt with in life, I always felt as though I needed an outside relief. This is why I self-medicated. Let me tell you what, when you talk about the issue behind the issue, and I got to tell you that I thought about how to try to prepare a fucking message for you today. Didn't work. I was going to bring my literature with me. I was going to crack the books for you. I was going to read and quote to your ass today. And God had something else planned because I forgot that shit at home. He said, John, you're going to tell the fucking truth today. No matter what. And then Terry told me outside, you're going to tell the truth today. So it just confirmed God had a plan for me when he asked me to come share this message of hope with you today. And this is what it is that my intention will be. But I did have to quote something. Because we're talking about issues. And I'm burnt. I've been using for a long time. This is my qualification. Once I was introduced to mood and mind-altering chemicals, I fell in love. I had thought that was the answer to any and all my problems. If I was pissed off. I could be mad as hell. If you whipped out something, it would make my day just that much easier. So I thought. Our literature talks about it. We needed something different. And we thought we have found it in drugs. I needed relief in any way, shape, form, or fashion. Because that's what we do as addicts. When we feel something, we drink something. We feel something, we smoke something. We feel something, we sniff something. We feel something, we shoot something. We feel something, we buy something. We feel something, we steal something. We feel something, we fuck something. But in this particular instance, we thought we had found it in drugs. And why should I be any different? The fourth step talks about, and we're talking about issues, and I don't want to stray off the topic because that shit would be real easy for me to do. That the more we live our program, the more God seems to put us in positions where issues will surface. Where I will not, let me tell you, I will not be able to consciously just go out and get something to make me feel better. God's going to make me deal with it, whether I like it or not. And the more I, because it says the more we work our program, because I could choose not to work our program. I still be in the position where the issues were surfaced, but how the fuck would I deal with it? It's gonna be it. Because I have to remember, and I gotta, you're gonna have to excuse me because when I do not see or find the need in my particular lifestyle as it is right now, where I am working on the issue of like trying not to use profanity. The disease of addiction is an ugly motherfucker. I am not about to sugarcoat this shit. I have to be able to talk about the disease as it presents itself to me. I am a recovering addict, and I remember clearly what addiction looks like. It has a look. It has a feel. It has a presence. It has a smell. I can remember when I think right now of active addictions, I think dark, gloomy alleyways, abandoned houses, apartments where the lights are gone, roaches are everywhere, but you can't see them because there's no lights, and the candlelight does well to camouflage the rodents and the fucking roaches crawling on the wall with so many. I've been in places where they just fall from the freaking ceiling on you, and you're going like this. I can remember when one fell on my shoulder, but I was so into what I was doing on the table that I let him crawl on me. And I finished what I was doing on the table before I brushed it off. And my justification was, well, they don't eat much. So I knew he wasn't going to bite a big chunk out of me. The lesser of two evils was to just let him crawl till I get a chance to put my hands on him. Now, today, if a bug gets on me, I'm dropping everything. But I say that to tell you of how important my drug of choice was for me today. I mean, then. Today, it's a little different. Like, issues are a little different. Like, I can remember all growing up that my issues were, one, I was this complexion. I was born in 1963 in the city of Newark. By the time I was 5 years old, the city was in an uproar. Dr. Martin Luther King had been assassinated, and jokers was running around just tearing shit up all over. The National Guard was riding up and down the street. I can remember that my mother had to take all the glasses out of the cabinets because the house would tremble. And I can remember one day, like my first experience with fear was when we were sitting on the couch, and you may tell my age, we were watching Sally Starr. I don't look that old, do I? And my father ran in, and I can remember we had got used to the sound of gunfire. Gunfire was as normal to hear in the Weequake section of North in the late 60s, just as the birds chirping in the morning. And my father ran in, and we were sitting on the couch, and he just said, "Sit still," and he turned the couch over on us. But I remember the look in his eyes, and I identified with that look because at that moment I got that, you know, that feeling right here, the one, the roller coaster, the butterflies, they call it, you know, that fear. I felt fear because I saw it in my father's eyes. And that was my first time I can identify with fear. And I can say now that I have been driven the majority of my life with that same feeling, because it was again when I found out that I was adopted. And it was not my biological parents. These were not my biological siblings. And I was a different color than everybody around me. I felt fear, Terry. Because I grew up in a time when everything was right on. Black power. The blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice. Where the fuck did I fit in? I was of Ghana. I grew up dealing with everything in life through adversity. I saw it as a struggle. Life itself, existence itself. Talk about not being able to live with who you are. Not being comfortable in your own skin. My sponsor used to say, he says it all the time. He says, you have to ask yourself, that people don't use just the fuck because they feel like using. You have to ask yourself, if you use to make yourself feel better, what the fuck is going on where you can't feel good in your own skin? That's what was going on. I didn't like me. That was my issue. I didn't like me because people frowned. You know, light-skinned brothers, we call it. Not all, I wasn't just light-skinned. I was high yellow. Red. And some people, and I used to wonder, what are you looking at me like that for? Motherfuckers just couldn't stand me. And I learned to adapt that. And I can remember there's times I look in the mirror and I couldn't stand me either. There were years where I stopped looking in the mirror. And I thought my issue was it was because of what I looked like and that I was adopted and I didn't know my biological parents. Well, I have to say that God had a plan for me to be able to erase all of those what I considered to be issues to use over the course of time, where I had to run out of the fact that I couldn't blame it on the color of my skin or yours anymore, Terry. I had to erase the misconception that, you know, I used because of fear. I didn't use because I was afraid. I used because I didn't want to feel afraid. Because I've been afraid of roller coasters, but I jump my ass on them all the time. Like it's nothing. Like it's nothing. After coming to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, did we find that we were sick people? That was one of the most relieving statements that I heard when I got here. Because now I could identify with you more, because I already knew I was sick. And it was good to know that the rest of you were just as sick as my ass. I started to get a sense of belonging where I had never had one. I never had a sense of belonging. I could identify with, like, you know, people used to say, well, what are you? Motherfuckers wouldn't ask me who I am. They wouldn't even say, who are you? This shit still happened. Terry, I'm going to tell you, I got an issue with that shit. With you asking me what I am before you asking me who I am. I have to, it's good in Narcotics Anonymous that I introduce myself as who I am. Then what I am. My name is John, and I'm an addict. It's important. I hear some people switch it up. I'm an addict called such and such. That works for you, fine. I need identity. I need to be able to know that I am somebody that matters. That my name should be more important than my ethnicity. My issue. It talks about in NA, what is the NA program? That we are a society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. For a long time, it was a misconception that drugs were my issue. For a long time, the issue wasn't like using, it was like not getting them. But then after coming around for a while, I realized, let me tell you something, and I hear this all the time, that using is not an option. I can't say that. Because as long as that shit is being shipped over here, and they're selling it just about any fucking way you can think, including right here in this hotel probably, then it's an option. For me, this addict, if it's not an option for you, then good for you. But there's a reason they call this Narcotics Anonymous, not Issues Anonymous. And one of the reasons is because the issue behind the issues is my ass. I am the issue behind the issue. The disease of addiction is not doing push-ups in the parking lot. It's not waiting for me around the corner. It's not out here in the hallway or in the bathrooms. The disease of addiction stands before you, and it's right here. It is in my thinking, my perceptions, and my decision making. Every decision I make, I try not to, based on emotions today, because that's what happened for me a lot of times. See, in the second concept in our workbook, It Works How and Why, in Tradition 2, page 60, it says, not one is capable of consistently making good decisions. I'm that individual. So before I make a decision, Terry, I run it across a few people first. When, if I feel as though it's substantial of enough of a decision that it's going to affect some things in my life, I try to run it across, you know, like people that, you know, I'll call up. I have a sponsor today. Because it's difficult for me to be able to stand up here, talk about a Narcotics Anonymous topic, and not mention the fellowship, my sponsor, Steps and Traditions, last but not least, God. See, we learned through some step work to how to pray and meditate, to improve our conscious contact with God, Not that I've never had one. I've always had one. I just need to improve on that shit. I need to learn how to communicate some things, running across some people, let somebody know what's going on with me, what some issues are. But my issue, as they have changed over the course of time and coming to Narcotics Anonymous, I don't suffer anymore. I may struggle with, but I don't suffer. When I'm suffering is when I'm just laying there and wallowing in that shit. But when you struggle with something, it means you're putting up a little fight, which means you're putting up some type of opposition to what the issue might be. And if it's an uncomfortable enough issue where it's causing those types of emotions in your family, because I looked up the word issue, there's about 28 different definitions for issue. I looked it up. One of them is an emotional discontentment. And that's what an issue is, as I can identify with it, with dealing with this topic. Because on any given day, as I just stated to you, and it's in our fourth step, that the longer we work our program, the more that God seems to put us in position where issue will surface. It would seem as though God is putting us in these positions, but a lot of times when we make the wrong decision, we put our own ass in that position. And we can't blame it on God all the time. Because that's what I found a lot of us, let me keep it on me, that I can have the tendency to do. I thought God played a dirty trick on me. He made this little white boy, right? And he slapped his ass straight in the middle of the hood, right? It was adopted by a black family with an all-black nucleus, all-black family, all-black neighborhood, all-black school, all-black church, all-black friends. And I thought that was a dirty trick. My issue today is this. All I need to do is just be okay with me. Narcotics Anonymous has allowed for me to be okay with me. Those are not issues that I struggle with anymore. And I don't suffer from. I struggle with some things. I do struggle with some things. This process is not easy. It's not going to be granted to me on a silver platter. There are some things I'm going to have to do. I'm going to have to work some steps with some sponsors because I may not have the same one my entire process with. I'm looking at outliving my recovery. Then, you know, my sponsor going to always be here. I can't put that much faith in another human being. I have to understand that he may be, at any given time, needed to be replaced. Who knows? But I'm going to work some steps with some sponsors, some people in this fellowship. I'm going to pray and I'm going to meditate on some issues. And I'm not going to just make decisions based on what I feel or think at that particular point in time. If I feel as though they're going to have a demonstrative effect on me eventually in the long run. Because that's what I used to do. I used to use and not care. They said insanity was repeating the same mistakes and expecting different results. I made the same mistakes and didn't give a fuck what the results might be. This program has given me hope. If you're ever in Union City, come by, visit us. My home group is the Candlelight Meeting in Union City on 39th in New York. And the reason I chose that to be my home group is because since the beginning of time, the candle light has always meant hope. It has always symbolized hope. And that's what our fellowship is. The program of Narcotics Anonymous, our message, we have an unadulterated, life-saving message that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. That addict, any addict, even this addict, that our message is hope, that our promise is freedom, and the result is change. Thanks for letting me share.
I'd like you to help me welcome our second speaker, who's Willie T.
All right, Willie T.
There's some things I get a little passionate about, not to try to justify, but sometimes when I'm looking for the right way to express it, it just comes. I'm going to start off. I've already thanked God for the people he's placed in my life. But I also want to start off by helping y'all understand where I'm coming from with this topic, the issue behind the issue. I want to read some stuff. I did remember John to bring mine. I stuck it in my pocket when I was changing clothes so I could not forget. Check this out. It's in our literature. Resentment at the world. I had living problems before I ever started using drugs. That's the sentence on that. Then the other thing I want to go is into step six, the second paragraph. Do we really want to be rid of our resentments, our anger, our fear? Many of us cling to our fears, doubts, and self-loathing or hatred because there is a certain distorted security in familiar pain. The issue behind the issue. Yeah, I remember when I was active, me and a friend was talking about this when we were sitting in my yard, 4th of July. 4th of July was never a very happy holiday for me. It was Get Even Day. You see, because everybody's shooting off fireworks, so they ain't going to pay too much attention to another pop pop. Mm-hmm. I'm a BC addict. That's before cell phones and before crack cocaine. Okay? I'm like too, John. I'm from the old school. I'll tell you my age, God. You done brought me here. Through his grace and mercy, if I live to see it this November, I'll be 60 years old. And I have 22 days and 9 months up in this wonderful fellowship, along with 24 years. Beyond my wildest dreams. My God got a sense of humor, because he's got the biggest punk in this hotel standing up here in front of a room full of people who say they're like me. And I have been given enough evidence to believe it, so that's why I show up. And I want to thank you for going first, because I had to wind down, because he frightens me at times, the stuff he shakes up out of me. And you set the tone and made it so clear. I hadn't touched Jack. And I remember when they brought my brother home from the hospital. You see, all before that, everything was cool. It was me, nobody else. You know how it feels, Terry, when the adult's giving you your props, as you feel? Well, see, we know that now, so we call it props. But it just felt good. My aunts, my uncles, when they would come by, they would, hey, Willie, what you doing? They'd slap a dollar or some change or whatever they had, and everything was all right. And then one day along came this sucker. And they no longer had any use for Willie. Everybody wanted to see the new little sucker in the back room with Mama. They went to pushing past me. Where's your mother? Where the baby? And it was like I didn't exist any longer. I did not know how to describe what I felt. But I can remember, as clear as I can see your face, I can tell you what I thought. And I was 4 years and some months old. I said, that sucker's gotta go. There's not a whole lot I remember about my childhood. But one of the first things I remember is that sucker that they was telling me I was supposed to love, he's your brother, he's this, take care of him, all that shit, he had to go. And I remember looking at Mom's one day and bugging her. And you know how you ladies who are mothers, yeah, some of you guys are mothers too, but I mean, I'm talking about maternally. You know how when the kids get to annoying you, and you answer, but you want them to just stop. I remember I kept asking Mommy, I said, Mommy, what'll happen? What's that? And she said, it's medicine. I said, well, what'll happen to him if he don't have it? She said, well, will he stop? I said, well, Mommy, why has he got to drink it? Because she never answered what would happen if he didn't have it. But she said he took the medicine to grow up and be big and strong and healthy. And it looked like chocolate. Something to me. So my reasoning, are you hearing me, ladies and gents? I hadn't used drugs. Randolph was born in March 53, and I was born November 47. So what was that? I was about 4.5 years older than my brother. And here I was clearly focusing and contemplating what needed to be done to remove him. And I had not touched Jack in the form of narcotics. And when she said it would make him grow up and be big and healthy, my thinking said, well, if I drink it, I'll be big and healthy, and he won't have it, and he'll leave here. I too, John, remember the high yellow girls. We call them the cuties. See, I didn't just come by this tan. It was always here. And long before they was yelling that I'm black and I'm proud and all that other Gucci stuff, I felt less than and didn't know it. So it started with Randolph showing up, and he got the baby got the attention. And now as I started getting older, I started hearing people tell me what I was going to become. Or they said things like, oh, look at them fingers, look at them hands, oh, he'll be a good pianist. I didn't like a fucking thing about a piano. But they was telling me what I was going to be, and nobody asked me what I wanted to be. Still had not used. I remember trying to talk to the girls, and I didn't know what to say, because y'all frighten me. To this day, y'all still frighten me. I can own up to it. But I went out with the fellas because I wanted to hang out. I wanted to be a part of. I wanted to be down. And like I said, I'm BC. I'm from the days of the good stuff. Triple Jack, Thunderbird, Golden Spur, Gypsy Rose. Them cocaine caps, them contact caps was filled with cocaine and it was 50 cents. We could get us a bag of Doogie. If you had a dollar bill, you could chip in on a bag of Doogie, pint of wine, some cigarettes, and you still had change for round trip on mass transit. See, I'm telling my age too, Joe. Look at Joe. And it was the fun old times. And you know, a funny thing happened. I went to a party one night, and still being afraid of everybody and shy, but you couldn't tell the fellas you wasn't down. And I don't know, they passed a little of this, they passed a little of that, they passed a little of this. And they told me the next day that I was the life of the party. I had arrived, y'all. And you know what I came into Narcotics Anonymous for y'all to teach me? That I had continuously tried to recapture the euphoria and the pleasure associated with them early days. And I looked at people like they were crazy when they said things to me like, Willie, when are you going to put that shit down? We go, you got your mind. This opened the door for me to have sex. And you telling me to leave it alone. You crazy? This opened the door for me to speak to people and what I felt like stand up for myself. And you telling me leave it alone. You got to be out your mind. This gave me the ability to some of the people that I had been totally afraid of facing, to look them in their face and feel as equal, if not better than. And a funny thing happened. And I ain't talking about nobody in here. I'm just talking about my issues that I didn't know were issues. Stuff turned on me. The same courage it gave me, the same ability it gave me, the same things I thought it allowed me to do, as time went on and I needed to do them things and needed that ability and needed that courage, it said, no, you got to get a little more in order for me to give you that same energy. See, I don't know about anybody in here. I'm dealing with an illness that wants me dead, and I know that. And one of my issues behind the issue was that when everybody else could tell me something, I couldn't hear them. I don't know about anybody in here, but can anybody imagine being in a place where you know you ain't got no business being there, but you're so locked and loaded, and as it talks about it in our literature, it's because the abnormal has become normal, so you feel right at home, and you're just sitting there, and there's a part of you that's struggling you need to get up out of here. You know you don't belong. And the other part of you is saying, man, what you thinking that shit for? And you just sit there listening to the negative committee. I remember, I can't say early on in my addiction, because you know what? I think from the first time I started using, I was hooked. Our basic text talks about hooked on a lifestyle. I remember the pimps and the hustlers. I remember just idolizing them. They looked like they had it going on. And the way I was living didn't seem like it was so. I remember seeing my pop get up, the alcoholic that he was, every morning about 3-4 in the morning, and get up and go out to work. And then I remember on the weekend, Friday night, it would start Thursday. Moms would start fussing at him because she knew he was going to come home eventually, but he wasn't going to come home with the money. And I didn't want that kind of a life. I just didn't want to. I thought it was a sucker's route to get up and crack it before the sun, beat the sun up and out the door, and come back and the sun was down? And then hear people fuss and argue about money. And I had met some guys, and you know what they was talking about? They was talking about having enough money from a couple of transactions that day to take care of everything. And I wanted a piece of that. One of the nicest things that happened to me, similar to John, 1982, my job suggested to me that if I went to detox, they'd keep the job for me. And I went. And when I went to the detox, I don't remember a whole lot there. When I got out, I went to the treatment program like they told me I was supposed to do. And I went to the meetings because I thought if I didn't, one of y'all would snitch on me. Yeah, you hear the sickness. And what happened was, to speed it up and make a longer story real short, what happened was y'all hooked me up in here. You see, I was living once again with my first sponsor, who happens to have been my mother. All the multiple relationships I had been involved with while active and that I had destroyed, I was now back home to Mom's house. And I went up to the meeting, and one night they dope fiend me into being the co-chair. Oh, yes, they did, John. They dope fiend me. Because the old timers that were there said, we need somebody responsible. Willie, you look like the guy. We need somebody responsible, somebody we can trust. I stuck my chest out. Oh, yeah, that's me. That's me. And they threw the keys out there, and they said, we need somebody that can take these keys and open the church up and let people come in here and set up for the meeting, and we can have our meeting. I said, oh, okay, yeah, yeah. And I remember going home to my mother, and I said, Ma, see what them people gave me? Because when I went home, that's what I had to do to get in. But when I went home and showed her the keys, I said, Ma, them people hardly know me, and they gave me the keys. She said, that's good, son. I know you. Bust my bubble right away. But a funny thing happened. Because I kept coming, and because y'all kept saying encouraging things to me, the process caught on. And I looked up one day, and my mother agreed to come to my anniversary, and she thanked everybody in there for giving her back her son. She was still pissed that I wouldn't go to church, because that was what she thought was recovering. But she was allowed her process. And because y'all allowed me at my pace to get into steps, I was able to get into reading some stuff. And why I read that at the sixth step, I had been coming here for years, and we talk about the issue behind the issue. Well, check this one out. I had been coming here for years. I had been going all over the place doing a whole bunch of things. But one day when I was in so much emotional pain, the sixth step took on a totally different meaning to me. Totally different. And it made me understand why I kept running my head into walls, even while not using drugs. You see, I had learned and I had developed a certain kind of behavior, and I'm not trying to justify it or clean it up. It's real for me. I had become comfortable in certain situations, no matter what. And there came a time in my life where, as the relationship would end, all them insecurities that I hadn't become comfortable sharing with you about would flare back up. You know, we talk that good stuff about, oh, and I'm going to the men's meeting. Get up in there and don't. I'm talking about, yeah, John, thank you. Remember my, I'll talk about me. I'm going in there and I ain't talking about what's really at hand, Because I'm hearing some of the other, I'm hearing how some of the other people behave when they hear real issues brought up, and that was all the justification I needed to shut down. We're talking about the issue behind the issue. I know damn well there's stuff I need to get into, but I'm surrounded by, I'm going to say it, a bunch of assholes that take this thing lightly and don't recognize how important it is that it saves lives. And that this is not the place that if you want to do a drive-by or you want to do some socializing, this is not the place to come and do it at. Because this is a place where people who have a fear that they finally summoned up enough courage and wherewithal to push past, they need the atmosphere of recovery where they can release it. And it don't be the newcomer in the back making all the noise. It be them. It be those of us with the time. So I've been on a little bit of a crusade lately, John. The issue behind the issue. And some of my kinfolk from Brooklyn is here. And they'll tell you, I'm known for standing in the back and meeting. Shh. Why don't you shut up? And sometimes, tell them, why don't you shut the fuck up? Because I'm at that point of being so annoyed that the meeting is being disturbed. And thank God for sponsors and sponsorship, because my sponsor told me, he said, Willie, when they make that much noise, your job is to get the fuck up and move so that you can hear the message. Stop denying people their process. I'm an addict in recovery, and this thing is so sacred to me that sometimes I go to the extreme with it. And I come back and I make amends and I ask people. And that's an issue behind the issue. Because sometimes I feel like I don't need to tell that motherfucker nothing. But in the spirit of the program, I do what we need to do, because you know what? Somebody needs to feel comfortable that they can come back next week. And yeah, they might have pissed Willie T. off, but that doesn't mean they're not welcome back at that particular place. Because you know what? It happens to us all. The reality of it is, he created this wonderful fellowship and gave us away. Because you know what? Check this out. If I'd have had to come up in here and have X amount of dollars to become a member, I'd have been fucked up. It would have been a wrap. I'd have never got in. And I had a job, but I hadn't got paid yet. And I don't know how good y'all are on promissory notes, you know. For me today, I'm going to say this and wind up. For me today, and it's funny, 1999, my mother died within the same week. I hadn't even buried her yet. My ex-wife told me she wanted a divorce. And I got right back into my lack of trust of women. That fast. I have a sign at work on the wall that says, often I think I have surrendered until he asks me for something I really do not want to let go of. I can laugh with you now, but it wasn't funny then. Because when she did that, I wanted to kill her. And I had even toyed with the idea of going back to Alphabet City with some of the guys that I still knew that, because they are BC, that no, they're not BC, I am. I mean, I could wave a $10 bill and maybe get a hit done. I had toyed with the idea of her leaving here along with my mother. What I'm trying to share is that a funny thing happens to this addict. I'll get in certain emotional situations, and without a doubt, I can revert back to the old thinking and the old behaviors at the drop of a hat. And don't let the time fool you. And I'm not saying that to justify it. What I recognize is, particularly with this topic, the issue behind the issue is that I must always work on the issue that's in the forefront so that the issue that's in the rear doesn't have a chance to rear its ugly head. Because that sucker is just really arresting. Me and the ex, we get along great today. It frightens me how well we get along. That's why I don't go around her.
Y'all, it's funny to y'all. It ain't funny to me.
It's the truth. Because one of the things, if nothing else, that I've become aware of is, you know what? The older I get chronologically, the closer I get to starting to grow up. They have a saying with professionals, and I'm going to say this and shut up. You do what you want with it. They say from the time you start using, you emotionally stop growing.
Yeah.
You don't have to believe me, but stop and look at any one of your friends when you see that they want something bad enough and they are told no, affirmatively. Watch how they behave, and you kind of start believing that there's some truth to that. If you're in here and you're new, welcome. If you're in here and you're just coming back, please let us know your struggle and how we can help you. And if you're in here and you think that this will not work for you, I'm here to tell you that approaching my 25th year, I've become more aware of stuff that I need to work harder at that I thought I had worked on. And I understand so much more what they mean when they say arrested. It ain't gone nowhere. It's just sitting, how we used to say, lying in cut, waiting for the opportunity. Thanks for letting me share.